lot of women out there that'd be glad to have a young, straight male making a pretty good living.
Being happy isn't all that great. I mean, the last time I was really happy, I got so fat.
If you want to leave, leave. My life doesn't revolve around these little get-togethers. I mean, don't flatter yourself.
You know, I look around me in this town and I see John and Cynthia and you, and I feel comparatively healthy.
That was 30 years ago. Sex Lies and Videotape, the trailer, the movie debuted officially August 18th, 1989, and it had won the Best Film at the Cannes Film Festival. It was the debut for Steven Soderbergh, who collaborated with our guest John Hardy. Soderbergh was the writer and director, Hardy was the producer, and David Jensen, who's a veteran actor who was in the movie, and knew Steven Soderbergh when he was not known by anybody, but he grew up here in Baton Rouge. The movie was filmed in Baton Rouge, and Sex, Lies, and Videotape is part of the American lexicon. Just the saying, you hear different takes on that saying at all times in our world 30 years later. And it was made for $1.2 million, one of the best producers' independent films ever, and now has grossed over $37 million, and it was hard to get it done. John Hardy has been with us before, but it's been a few years. And John, you know as well as anybody that this film almost was never done. But how did it happen?
Yeah, it was almost never done. And it took many producers, so to speak, to get it done. And I ended up making it with Steven because we knew each other here. And I was the only guy around who had ever produced a film before. And but there were numerous iterations, starting with Musafilm, which was Mike Kerb's company in Los Angeles. He was the lieutenant governor of California. And Steven wanted to do it in black and white and for a certain amount of money. And there were a bunch of people who were interested in it. But in the end, Mike pulled out, and others filled in, Bobby Neumeier and Nancy Tenenbaum, Morgan Mason, and RCA Columbia put up the money, and that's a division of Columbia, which is now Sony, and Virgin Vision bought the foreign rights, which paid for basically half of the film.
Well, if you'd like to comment about Sex, Lies, and Videotape, John Hardy, who collaborated with Steven Soderbergh on several other films, as did David Jensen, one notable one here in Baton Rouge, Schizopolis. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. And John Hardy, 30 years ago, was on the brink of stardom himself in a way. Producers, of course, prosper when movies they make are successful. And when did you know that this one was special?
Well, when we were making it, we didn't have really any suspicion that it would be special necessarily, but we knew Steven was special. We knew he had a great talent for many things, and he would come up with something. And he cut the film in 4 weeks after we shot it, in 30 days. And he cut it down off Pennywood Drive, I guess.
Video Park.
And 4 weeks, we looked at it, and we both, in his book that he has out called, remarkably, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, he said that he and I looked at each other and said, this works. It's like a big surprise. But, yeah, so.
Even while shooting it, you know, it was evident that that the actors, Peter Gallagher and James Spader and Andy McDowell and Laura Sanjiacomo, were raising the words off of the page, you know, and it was, as Steven often said, you know, was better acted than it was written. And I think that excitement was there through the whole shoot.
Four relatively unknown actors at the time. The best known was Andy McDowell. And during that summer of 88, when it was filmed, I used to see her at Louie's. Beautiful young woman with an infant child and another one on the way, if I remember right.
Right.
And had a bit of she was drop dead gorgeous, but had a little bit of acne, as I recall, and she was not perfect, but she was an exceptional actress. But she had been ridiculed, John, as an actress. She was a great model prior to Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Right. Her voice was replaced on Greystoke, I believe it was. And
by
Glenn Close. Yeah, that's right.
Which is, how humiliating would that be? But she is a good, very good actress, and she wouldn't have gotten a role. Stephen wouldn't have cast her if she wasn't. So.
And Spader got Best Actor at Cannes, and right. Of course his career has gone gangbusters ever since. David Jensen, you're a veteran actor, and you knew Steven Soderbergh back in the day when he was in high school. He wanted to do this for a living. His dad, of course, I think was the dean of education at LSU,
right.
Peter Soderbergh.
Yeah.
And but Steven had other things in mind, and you met him. You're about 10 years older. You met him, and how was he when he was 16 or 15?
Well, I met his dad first. I was in education, and I was wandering down the hall near his office, and he noticed me going back and forth, and I went in, and I said, I'm really worried about being a teacher. And he gave me audience for about 2 hours and kind of straightened me out. And it was one of those times at LSU that was terribly instructive. And he became a friend after that. And I think
he talked Stephen into staying at U High, graduating, because Stephen was ready and would have been capable of leaving school and doing
in 10th grade,
right into filmmaking. And he took a class at LSU with Michael McCallum and a bunch of folks who still around here, Paul Ledford and others.
Joseph Wilkins.
And they learned how to make films, and he was 17 years old. And what people don't, one thing that we thought you might want to hear about is that Baton Rouge was chosen to be the site for filming because Stephen knew he could make it here and be comfortable making it here. It's not set here. It's not set anywhere. And the fact is, back then, there was a very vibrant filmmaking and advertising industry. And he was a part of that. I was a part of it. David was a part of it. And we would compete for ad awards, and it would be hundreds of people going to these things, and Stephen would make films for those awards, and he would win some of the awards. And he did a lot of work out in L.A., back and forth. It wasn't like he just suddenly bloomed. You know, he came fully formed. He worked hard for 8-10 years before he showed up here at that young age to make the feature.
Yeah, he did a film, R.E.M., in 1985, about himself that a lot of people feel that it's still one of his best. He shot a film called Winston with me and John Meese, David Foyle, and Cheryl Ducharme. And did commercials for John. In fact, he did a Lockworks commercial in, what year was that?
87, maybe.
Yeah.
But, so here there was a whole community of technicians and others that he knew, many of them, mm-hmm. and he felt that he could, he wrote a very intensive interior film, and it needed to have that space where he could bring the performances right. out of the actors. Mm-hmm.
Now, listener Jim notes that even though Baton Rouge is never named in the film, you can easily identify the Bayou, ZZ Gardens, Ray's Bait Shop.
Yeah, the first location.
The first location.
Right.
And Sonny Cranch's bedroom.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and our production office was my office, you know, which was already ready to go, you know, so... Well, yeah, that's true. If you know Baton Rouge and if you know Ray's Bait Shop,
the Garden District is mentioned. Not flatteringly either, but Peter Gallagher, James Spader, Andy McDowell, Laura San Giacomo, they did a spectacular job along with Steven Soderbergh and John Hardy and David Jensen. And we'll have John and David with us for a little while longer. 877-217-5757 is your number. Remembering Sex, Lies, and Videotape on the 30-year anniversary of a worldwide and Baton Rouge classic. Now the news with Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and in-house are Sonny Cranch's partner, John Hardy. Sonny, of course, is somebody we always remember when we talk about sex, lies, and videotape. That was a Freudian slip and an appropriate one. But John Hardy, the producer, the main guy who made it happen and defied the odds and got Sex, Lies, and Videotape made, with the help of a lot of people, including David Jensen, whose voice is heard in the film, veteran actor who knew Steven Soderbergh when he was a kid and talked him into graduating from high school. Otherwise, he would have gone off and he probably would have done okay without a high school degree. But he does have a diploma from U High. And I think briefly attended LSU. I know he attended LSU while he was in high school.
While he was in high school, right. Michael McCallum had a film class, and he kind of became the mascot of the film class and was good friends with Joseph Wilkins, Paul Ledford, Chuck Ferrier, Rainey, mm-hmm. and Jim Zeitz. We're all a part of that class.
And Matt Doyle, our producer, notes that three of the most famous Baton Rougeans, Steven Soderbergh, Stormy Daniels, and Garrett Graves, do not have college degrees. And we're the only city in America that has two land-grant universities. But, you know, you can do great things without a college degree. 877-217-5757, your number. Let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hello, Jim. Hello, John. I remember just how complicated.
All right, Phil, you're sounding really, really muffled, so let's see what we can do to make it better, and hopefully we can hear Phil at full capacity.
Phil was the gaffer on Sex Lies.
Yeah, I know he has mm-hmm. a long career in the film industry himself. Mm-hmm. Phil, David just noted that you were the gaffer on this great film.
Well, I was kind of like the gaffer in name only. I really didn't know everything involved with the job, and they were kind enough to have me be on the crew. It was such a wonderful experience. It changed so many lives. I remember how controversial it was. We really didn't know that it would have a market because of the subject matter. And actually, we couldn't really tell people the whole name of the movie. If you said Sex, Lies, and Videotape around Baton Rouge, people would say, well, I don't know about that. So we just said it was Lies and Videotape.
And like,
but
Phil,
it was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
I feel like, you know, and you've been on many a crew list. You look on crew list now, and there's 50, 60 people on the crew, and there was, by my count, was about 22 on Sex Lies. So and there were many people doing two jobs, two and three jobs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The dolly grip and the lighting, and it was Walt Lloyd who basically carried the production side of it. But and the temperatures, and good Lord, how many stars came out of that, and the vocabulary, and what's somebody's hidden agenda. So mm-hmm.
there you go. Mm-hmm. And speaking of, thank you, Phil. Sonny Cranch is dialed in. Sonny, good morning. Hi, Sonny.
Good morning, Jim. You know, I've been listening. I had to turn off the radio so there wouldn't be feedback. You know, John alluded to something that I think has always been very important in my mind, was the fact that Steve did come back because of his comfort level, or filmed and chose to film in Baton Rouge because of his comfort level with this group of people who were highly skilled filmmakers, albeit 60-second filmmakers, John, in addition to his degree from LSU, is also a graduate of the London Film School. And as he mentioned, he had produced a film in Israel following his graduation from film school. So when Steven needed someone to do a production breakdown, he came to John, who was able to do that and had the experience and the knowledge to do so. But John and Steven were also able to film assemble this production crew, which, with the exception of the cinematographer, the assistant director, which they brought on kind of, you know, after they really started production, and the actors, it was an all Louisiana crew. And I think that's just a testament to the talent and capabilities that we have here in Baton Rouge and New Orleans and in Vines. And I just wanted to make that comment. And David Jensen, by the way, is an accomplished actor who's appeared in motion pictures that have, you know, been all internationally acclaimed and currently has a continuing role in Queen Sugar, but he's quite a talented young man himself.
Yeah, a lot of talent. Was on the set. Filming started July 25, 1988, wrapped up September 3rd. So it was done quickly and produced quickly. And the following May, it was the most buzzed about independent film on the planet.
And I think it's important to remember it's a pre-internet thing. You know, this is when the newspaper, The Advocate, was downtown. This is when L&B and Fidelity. It was a really different time. And I think it's a film that spoke to that time. Mm-hmm. Yet today, it's more relevant than ever. You know, I think.
Sonny went on to collaborate with Steven Soderbergh on some other great films, Aaron Brockovich, and some films.
Well, that was me.
Steven. Steven. And you and Aaron Brockovich and
Sonny Soderbergh.
I'm conflating the two. Stephen Cranch.
That's okay. That's fine.
That's okay. It wouldn't be the first time I made a mistake today.
Totally wrong.
But yes, you and Stephen, Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12. But you did a couple of more films here in Baton Rouge, including Out of Sight, which was the first big one, I think, for Jennifer Lopez. George Clooney was relatively young, and they had a big hit. And that one was named Best Film by some measurements that year. I know it defeated Saving Private Ryan in one battle for honors for best film.
Well, it was a big film for Steven, too. You know, anyway, it was a great film, a comedy, crime comedy that totally worked and just kind of blew the doors off of the box office, and it was so well made.
Yes,
and
technically.
We went from Schizopolis here, where we were running around town, to this Out of Sight. And we did come here to shoot the prison scene. There's a prison scene there that was based on a Florida situation, a breakout. They wouldn't allow filming there, but I knew that we could get Angola to let us build a chapel on the, you know, there and film, and they did.
And Schizopolis was almost a no-budget film that's now become a cult classic, featuring rather prominently Jimmy Weatherford, the owner of Louis, in his birthday suit.
That's right.
How in the world did you come up with that?
I didn't. I was recruited to chase Jimmy Weatherford across the, you know, that's a very interesting film that could have gone many different ways, and actually that went to Cannes as well. It was called the Film Surprise. It was quite a surprise.
Harvey offered him $10 million.
Well, I went over there with it, and Mr. Weinstein did offer some money. It wasn't 10. We would have taken that, I'm sure.
Well, that's a question a listener asks. Was Harvey Weinstein involved in Sex, Lies, and Videotape?
Yeah. He was not after the fact. Columbia paid for most of it, but they knew that they didn't really know how to release it. It was not a standard A movie. So, okay.
Maxwell Dovinsky writes, "What makes getting an independent movie so difficult? Shouldn't the new technology make it easier?"
It's easier to make, but somebody's got to see it.
Yeah, you got to see it. And another listener notes that Louisiana has produced two of the greatest independent films ever in Sex, Lies, and Videotape and Easy Rider, Peter Fonda died Friday, 69 years old. But that one was 1969, 50 years ago, and certainly it is.
We worked with Peter Fonda again on The Limey, which was a film that Steven did, and Peter was in that. Great guy. Hmm.
Stevens started so early. Do you burn out sometimes?
I don't think he would burn out. But, you know, for a while he said, "This is my last film," or "That's my last film," and he did stop for a while and start painting. But then I think he decided, people want to see my films; they don't want to see my paintings.
But it's an inexact science, isn't it?
Filmmaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just never know.
Right.
And some great films, just for whatever reason, are not critical. They're not popular hits, and sometimes not critically acclaimed, but years later they may get a better review than they did when they were on the screen.
Yeah. Sex Lies is just sort of the opposite. It got all this attention But it didn't really make that much money in the end, because I know I own part of it. I'm still looking at my empty wallet on that deal. But some of it's being chased by some of the producers now. But it's a moving target. The back end on a motion picture.
I remember. I think it was either you or Sonny who told me that Laura San Giacomo got her first check as an actor while she's doing Sex Lies and Videotape.
It was her first feature, and I brought over her per diem, which is spending money in cash in an envelope, and I gave it to her, and she looked and she went, well, here's my paycheck. I said, no, that's not your paycheck. This is your walking around lunch money. So she was totally new to it.
And she had a great career, good career, greats overused, but a very good career herself. And that film 30 years ago spawned many others into stratospheric success, notably Mr. Soderbergh. And Mr. Hardy didn't do bad as well. What do you think the legacy of that film is?
Well, it opened up what's now considered independent filmmaking, because it could really work. And now there's so many films being made now, and what's independent and what's not, who's to say? But in the environment where you go to a cinema to see a film, independent films were more difficult to have made. And this showed that you could make a popular, critically acclaimed film as an independent film. It didn't have to be a studio film.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number, and our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. We'll spend a few more minutes with John Hardy and David Jensen of Sex, Lies, and Videotape. 30 years ago today, it was spending its second day on the big screen. We'll talk about it. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And we had a surprise guest and an important one at the beginning of the show, Bob Mann, who was communications director for Governor Blanco. And he remembered the former governor, who died yesterday at age 76, and we intended to spend a little longer with John Hardy and David Jensen, and that we'll do. Nick Bryan has agreed to step aside, and we'll talk about Jeffrey Epstein on another day. So 877-217-5757 or talk@talklouisiana.org if you'd like to talk to John and David in our remaining time about the 30-year anniversary of Sex, Lies, and Videotape, produced here in Baton Rouge for $1.2 million. It's made over $37 million worldwide on the big screen and elsewhere, and it almost did not happen, but it spawned the careers of many, including Steven Soderbergh, who is a Baton Rougean, who has gone on to a few different great things since then. Miriam Davey writes, caught the tail end of your interview on Schizopolis, but one has it freeze frame it to see my blurred image. I had a speaking part, if one considers a scream to be speaking. And that is another Baton Rouge treasure. Somebody, maybe John Word, ought to do a book about Baton Rouge movies. And it's certainly a big part of the culture here in Baton Rouge. If you've ever seen Schizopolis, you'll never forget it. And it was done after Sex, Lies, and Videotape. So there we go.
It was done after, and it was in a period where Stephen, I think, felt like he was getting away from the joy of filmmaking. We had done a film in Austin, and he didn't like the experience, and he said, let's go back to Baton Rouge and put together this group, and David put it together, really. And we shot forever, like for a year and a half. I can't even remember.
Yeah, because there were short ends. I think the longest load was like 250 feet.
But one thing I'd like to point out, we shot this film here in 30 days, but then it took another almost a year, possibly, to get it finished in Los Angeles. And it was mostly done by Steven and Larry Blake, who was his
sound editor.
Sound editor and a re-recording mixer, and who's like a genius.
Yeah.
And he's a New Orleanian. He still lives in New Orleans, and Steven has finished all of his films with Larry.
All right. Courtney Taylor writes, would a producer please help Jim Inkster stop making comments about women's appearances? He just introduced discussion about Andie MacDowell saying she was well known and that she was pregnant and beautiful but not perfect because she had acne. I certainly didn't mean that as a disparaging remark, just as an observation, because I happened to see her at Louis during that time. And I have commented many times about men's appearances as well, including our president being morbidly obese. So maybe I shouldn't comment about anybody's appearance because I get some people who are upset. But certainly I did not intend to offend you with that remark, or Miss McDowell, who I don't think it's an insult, Sonny, to say, or excuse me, John, to say that she's one of the most beautiful women that has ever inhabited the big screen. And she was a model. And because of that, there was a big chance on her being capable of doing this job, but she certainly showed then and now, long career, continues, that she's got the chops to do her craft as well as anybody.
And well, her daughter, who was, I guess you saw, she was about ready to give birth to, she is Margaret Qualley, and she's now an up-and-coming, excellent actress.
Yeah, and at that time, she was with child, and how did you hide that on the screen?
She wasn't that pregnant. I mean, when they did it, we did a reshoot, or Stephen did, in L.A. of her finding an earring in a rug, and that was a little, that you know, you could shoot around her stomach at that point. But she wasn't that pregnant, so she let Stephen know she was pregnant. He didn't know it.
Well, James Spader got Best Actor, and his career has been more successful than that of Peter Gallagher, but some would say Gallagher is the person who makes that film. David, I remember reading when the premiere happened in Los Angeles that people were actually shouting at him as he left because he was so convincing as this heel who was cheating on his wife.
Yeah. But Peter is terrific. And they... unusual for the time, and John, you can speak to this, they had a rehearsal period of about 2 weeks, which saved a lot of time in production. So they knew exactly what they were doing, and I think it showed. And I think subsequently you go, why doesn't everybody do this? You know, when they came to the set, we didn't have today where... you would hose it down with digital media. They did 2-3 takes and they moved on.
The content, as Phil pointed out, was a bit controversial for its time. I guess it would be much tamer today. But did you have any concern that it might not be widely received popularly because of the content about this weird dude Spader who is videotaping people and getting them to talk about
right.
very personal matters.
Well, it didn't have any prurient sort of aspect to it. It was all very cerebral, and it was all Stephen's psychology on the screen, and not his personal psychology, but that's what made it an interesting and well-made and thoughtful film, and it didn't have any trouble about the sex part. I mean, there really wasn't any.
And Baton Rouge never looked any better, even though Baton Rouge is not named. It's a beautiful film, and you had four, both the two men and the two women, four very attractive stars, and that doesn't hurt either, does it?
Never hurts.
And the conversation was erotic, you know, and not, which sometimes has gotten forgotten in films, and... that was a key part of it.
It was about that time that Paul Newman was also in this town doing Blaze. It premiered in 89 as well, later in 89. And Blaze was the big budget film that was getting a lot of attention. And it I think, did make money, but it hasn't certainly been part of the American lexicon the way Sex, Lies, and Videotape was. And there you go.
Well, it didn't speak to the individual. You know, I mean, I'm sure Earl Long's an interesting subject, you know, but I think this became a landmark film because it's...
more universal. You didn't have to know about Louisiana politics or stripping or anything to enjoy it.
And Paul Newman was probably too pretty to play Earl Long convincingly.
Yeah.
Well, you guys continue to do what you do, and John, we're glad you're back in Baton Rouge, have been for some time. For those who don't know, John is the brother of Beth Courtney, who's done rather well in this line of work, and quite a dynamic duo and the products of a general who lived to be 100?
Well, 99. It was a week short.
99 years old. Mm. So you come from good stock. And for those who are aspiring to be in this business, any advice from either of you or both about how to do it, how to stay the course?
Well, it's just too big of a business, and thank goodness, because if you really have an interest in film, what does that mean, or theatrical film, there are ways to follow your passion that don't have to go down a course of being a writer or a director or an actor or all these things. You just have to keep plugging at it and wait for breaks. That's what it is.
And I think we were doing Schizopolis. Stephen said to me one day, "Are you mad at me?" And I said, "No, why?" He says, "Well, you seem to be mad at me." And I said, "Well, yeah, I guess I am a little mad at you." And he said, "Do you know why?" And I said, "No, can you tell me?" And he said, "Yeah," he says, "you're mad at me because things work out for me." And I go, "Why is that?" He says, "Because I'm living the life I intend." And it just, and I think that's true. You know, Stephen's wasn't afraid to fail. He was very energetic about his occupation. He took it seriously early. And I think anyone that's worked with him knows that, and like Spader said right away, he said you direct like an editor, because he is, and most of his last films is he's the writer, the editor, first camera operator, mm-hmm. And I think he's a serious person who is doing what he likes to do.
I remember him saying that seeing Jaws. Oh, is what propelled him into this business. Mm-hmm. Did anything that you watched as a younger person, John, did anything influence you?
Well, yeah, I guess I was early on. I finished high school in London, and I went to a lot of film things there, but I was taken by the French New Wave early on, and then just the opposite, you know, Lawrence of Arabia. So it was on both spectrum. Oh. And that was Stephen's thing too. You know what I mean? He said, "Well, wait a minute, you like Lawrence Arabia?" Yeah, and it's like fantastic. And we worked with Ann Coates later, who was the editor on that film.
Yeah. When John and him met, you know, it was Truffaut and Godard and those films that they both loved. And yeah, with me, I mean, he ignited my interest in filmmaking, whether it was Michael Curtis or Lubitsch.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, and congratulations. 30 years later, we're still talking appropriately about Sex Lies and Videotape. Steve Wynnum writes, "Far too often people don't get the person they think they elected. Kathleen Blanco was one of the exceptions. She was what we would like all our elected officials to be, genuine and genuinely good as well." Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.